It's Friday, January 20th, 2017, and you know what that means. Donald Trump gets inaugurated at noon today. I hope you're done with your morning, folks, because now it's time to get in gear and organize to stand up and fight. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press and Raging Chicken Media. And each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. So on today's show, there's no way to avoid it, folks. We'll get into our thoughts on Inauguration Day. Now, we are recording this before the inauguration takes place, so we'll get to our thoughts on the actual inauguration, anything that kind of goes on during inauguration, the protests that take place. We'll get to that next week on next week's show, or maybe we'll even have a special session. We'll see. But today we'll talk a little bit about what's on our minds. And also today we're going to talk about some bad signs coming out of the PA Democratic Party. It looks like they just may not have learned their lessons from the 2016 election. And I don't know how more glaring it needs to be. We're going to get to that. Cause I'm a little worked up about the, some of the directions that the Democratic Party in the Pennsylvania may be going. So we've also got some really exciting announcement, or and a really exciting announcement today about the Rick Smith Show, and the expansion of progressive media, some hopeful signs on this dark day. And we also got some music to share with you today. Some music for the resistance. So all that and more on today's show. I want to remind you, literally now more than ever, folks, you can keep Raging Chicken Media going strong, progressive activist media right here in Pennsylvania by becoming a member for as little as $2 a month. I mean, we're digging in for 2017 and Trumplandia, and we need you. We need the progressive community to help us out, to deepen pull no punches progressive media that will hold power accountable. Our new team of writers is already doing that. You've already seen that in the pages of Raging Chicken Press. But you simply need to go to the RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab at the top. You can just click on Become a Member, right? And then it'll take you right on your way. We're also on Patreon. So you go to that same tab and you click on Be a Patron. And you can become a member that way through Patreon. Or if you're just not ready yet to make the commitment, become a member to help out progressive media right here in PA in the region, you can still make a one-time donation under that same tab by just clicking Donate, and they'll take you to a PayPal site. So, Sean, it's here, man. It's here.
The mothership has cometh.
It has cometh.
It's like that scene from Independence Day when the mothership just comes through the horizon, and there it is. There she is.
That's true, you know, and I think that, you know, the way you said that has cometh, I think we just may need to start talking like in old English or medieval English now. I think that would be more appropriate for what's headed our way.
Yeah, well, we are probably going to go back to the Dark Ages over the next 4 years. We're going to skip the Renaissance and go back to the fucking Dark Ages. You know, burn all the science books, burn all the history books, you know, don't do anything about education, don't do anything about climate change, you know, just go boom, right back to the 1300s.
And it'll be great. It'll be great.
Make the 1300s great again.
I said, yeah, exactly. I said one of my favorite memes that kind of just that I popped up in one of my feeds this week was, don't forget to set your clocks back 300 years tonight.
Yeah. I say we just set our clocks back to like pre-Magna Carta, you know, because that's where it seems like our society is going, our civilization is going. You know, it's going to be a long, rough 4 years. And, you know, one of the things I'm really afraid of, I had this conversation last night with, you know, a kid that's 18 years old. Uh-huh. And he's home from college working at the pizza shop. And he said, you know, he said he's not worried about Trump, but what he's worried about is his friends. He has a lot of gay and black friends and, you know, people with friends of color and where he goes to college. And he said he's more worried about them than he is about himself. And then he's not worried about Trump doing anything, but he's worried about the racists and the bigots that are empowered because of Trump.
And yeah, well, and, you know, and that's a real thing, you know, I mean, that's a real thing to be worried about. And it's, you know, I have to say it's good on him, right? Good on that kid to recognize, number one, that, okay, you know, he might not be directly impacted on it, right? But members in his community, right? His friends, his, you know, are going to be impacted. And so that's good. Now, let's hope that we have people that are out there. I mean, I've heard similar stories like this, too, as well. And let's hope that those folks who recognize that there's an issue are willing to do more than just recognize it, right? They're willing to actually become part of solidarity networks and to organize to protect our communities. Because I really do think that's going to be a big part of what we need to do over the next 4 to 8 years is, yes, we need to build our organizations, but we need to build our organizations in a way that, you know, are defensive. And I, you know, I'm always a fan of going on the offense, and we do need to do some of that too as well, but we have to have our defenses ready too, to protect each other.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of stuff over the next 4 years.
I'll say. So, you know, here we go. And I want to let people in on some of the conversations that we've been having on Raging Chicken. You know, one of the things that it may sound small, but, you know, this is something I think that a lot of progressive media that we're talking about is how even to kind of refer to, like, you know, the incoming Trump administration. You know, I mean, here's a guy who there's all sorts of questions about, forget, you know, yes, all the conflict of interest and things like this, but, you know, international involvement in kind of in our elections and tampering with the elections. And, you know, I'm using tampering in a broad sense, right? At this point, there's no evidence that, you know, on election day, there were internet hacks into the election process and things like this. But in terms of an overall offensive by a foreign government, now it even looks like there may have been direct connections between the Trump campaign staff and Russia during the campaign. We'll see how that plays itself out. But you're also talking about a guy who was elected by, you know, by losing the popular vote by almost 3 million votes, and someone who has represented what a lot of us think are non-American values. And I say that, you know, knowing, you know, the fraught history of this country and the fraught history of, quote unquote, American values. But, you know, I think that what you just brought up there, Sean, about, you know, this 18-year-old kid, I mean, at the very least, you think that we were getting to that point where, you know, say, you know, gays and lesbians, for example, had the right to marry now, have the right to marry now, are, you know, have, you know, polls have shown that tides have turned in terms of how we're expanding our communities and accepting folks in our communities. And that is, you know, we're on the verge of having that turn back.
Yeah. And we're also on the verge of having other things turn back. I was reading something earlier today. Violence Against Women Act may actually get repealed under Donald Trump. Something that Obama fought hard for and actually had to get through, you know, with political maneuvering, you know, with Republicans who are against him. You know, the Violence Against the Women Act might get repealed. You know, one of the things I was thinking about before we started, and we were just saying about how Clinton won the popular vote by 3.5 million votes. I think it was maybe like a week or two after the election. Sam Cedar had a guest on talking about compulsory voting in your deep blue states. So you drive that divide, you drive that wedge further and further. You make people vote in California. You make people vote in New York. So the next time this happens, instead of winning by 3.5 million votes, you win by 7 or 8 million votes and you don't get the Electoral College. You drive that divide deeper and deeper. And one of the things I think we have to do as progressive media is – make sure we remind people that he's an illegitimate president and not illegitimate because of what's happening with Russia. Yes, you can make that argument. Illegitimate because he lost by 3.5 million votes. He lost. That was one of the largest defeats ever in Electoral College history or popular vote history. And he still won the election. You know, I think, you know, we don't call him President Trump. We call him Trump or as President Trump.
You just cut out there, Sean. You said we call him Trump or.
Or we call him Trump or just Donald Trump. We don't call him President Trump. You know, we divide that. It's our job. I think it's our job as activist media and independent media to drive that wedge further and further and really, you know, be that wedge and split the people in half.
You know? I think you're right. And I want to I recognize that there are people out there who on the left too, right? You know, I mean, who get a little bit more uncomfortable when you talk about kind of calling the illegitimate president or, you know, saying that, you know, he's been voted, followed the rules and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't like, you know, it was overtly stolen or something like that, you know, and there's people that respect these institutions and they say, okay, yes, like it or not, you know, we wouldn't want that to happen if it was one of our presidents. Well, you know, it did, right, with Obama. But I think here's the point, right? I think the point about why that it's important now to do exactly what you said is because we've seen over the past at minimum 8 years, but it's been longer than that. But let's just use the Obama administration as an example. We've seen a party that, after spending decades, right, fanning the flames of its base, expanding its kind of right-wing media infrastructure through talk radio, Fox News, and so on, right, and reporting and creating this kind of world of lies and misrepresentations to basically create this radical fringe, right, this radical right-wing fringe. And it's helped kind of goose that along, if you will. And what they showed during the Obama administration, that all those things that had been kind of norms in our political life up until then, right, institutional norms and so on, the Republicans have been willing to completely throw out the window, right? And it's that example of, like, you know, if we're all in the same game, right, we're all playing that same game, we don't want, you know, we want to respect the rules, even if we don't like the rules, even if the rules don't work to our advantage, this under it, right? You want to respect the rules. But that only works if both sides, both people or groups of people, are playing by the same sets of rules, right? If, you know, we're sitting here and want to respect the institutions and all this, you know, today is a peaceful transfer of power. I keep on hearing this on media and things like this. Well, yeah, that's true, right? Except we're doing it in a way that is fundamentally different from before. And it's disorienting at times. When you start to kind of get in this abstract space of saying, like, well, we need to respect these institutions, when you're talking about, like, a party, right, not just Donald Trump, the entire Republican Party has decided to kind of have a strategy of throwing out any kind of political norms that we should respect, all sorts of civility, all a sense of, like, how you kind of treat a president, how you kind of engage in politics. That's been thrown out the window. So we're at this point now, if we actually care about any of those norms, right, respectability, civility, and so on like this, then we have to fight. This goes back to, like, you know, I go back to Thomas Paine on this, where Thomas Paine had this these big arguments about the Quakers, is saying, like, yeah, you know, you can talk about, you know, nonviolence and all this kind of stuff, that's fine. But if you've got British troops that are in the street that are kind of killing our people and they're kind of are stealing our money, then we have to be prepared to stand up and fight for those norms, right? For that civility, right? But you have to kind of engage in battle in the meantime.
And one of the things where, like, you know, we're talking about this, and one of the things that really, like, irked me, pissed me off over the past couple of days is, you know, I would like to commend, I would like to, like, thank Representatives Boyle, Brady, Doyle, and the last Philadelphia representative, Evans, mm-hmm. for all skipping out on this election, mm-hmm. or skipping out on the inauguration today, right? Mm-hmm. I would like to thank those four representatives. But how come Matt Cartwright and Bob Casey are going to attend today's inauguration? They shouldn't be going to today's inauguration. Frankly, any Democrat shouldn't be going to inauguration. They should all be out there skipping the inauguration. There should be 100. There should be every single Democrat in that building, in that Senate and in that House chamber, should be skipping today's inauguration to tell Trump that they're not going to stand up and take.
Now, I agree. You know, I agree. And this,
like,
this shows
you want to drive that wedge. You know, like, you're still playing by those norms that got thrown out. You know, this is a line in the sand. You don't attend today's inauguration, in my opinion. That's a line in the sand. You attend that inauguration, you are complicit with Donald Trump.
Yeah. And I, you know, and the way I look at it is like this too, as well, is, you know, it shows you the kind of work that we need to do going forward. And we're not going to have time to kind of get into all this today on today's show, but it's going to be one of the kind of ongoing conversations we're going to have here about the role of the Democratic Party and how do we engage the Democratic Party if we do engage the Democratic Party. There's lots of debates already. Do we start a third party and so on? I mean, I've got my thoughts on this. But the good thing I would say at least is that, you know, it's over 50 now of Democrats who are not going to attend the inauguration.
Over 60, actually.
Is it over 60 now?
Yes, so, I think it was over 60 over the past couple of days.
That's excellent. So there's where we start, right?
That's your resistance. That's where your leaders are at right there.
Well, that's at least the leaders within the Democratic Party, right? I mean, you know, this is what we have to recognize, is that there's going to be a lot of leadership that's going to have to come from outside the Democratic Party. And I think that's, you know, what we're going to see. A lot of our focus is also going to be is beyond that, those kind of movements, right? Looking at the leadership that's happening outside the party, because if there's any lesson that we have to learn, right, is that without the power of organization, without the power of people organized in movements and political movements and strong ones, right, the Democratic Party will do what the Democratic Party just did for the past few decades, right? It will not move, right? We cannot count on them, right? But right now we have this split organizations should gotta acknowledge, just as you did, right? Acknowledge that as that split and say, you know, kudos to them, right? For standing up and kind of making that visible. And then we also have to kind of point out when, you know, people like Bob Casey just don't. You know, we got some flack for that last week for you know, pointing out that Bob Casey was instrumental in helping shoot down Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar's amendment when it came to through that reconciliation process when they're trying to repeal the ACA. But you know what? That's what we got to do. And I think there's fissures within the Democratic Party. We support those, that side that is going to kind of be stand with people, and those folks who want to kind of pretend and get their head in their sand and pretend that we're living in some sort of normal times. Well, you know, we're just not, folks. So listen, we're coming right up to a break, and we come back from the break, we're going to get into this on the PA Democratic Party a little bit. Sean and I have been talking a little bit about this, and got some things that are some kind of what I would call disturbing developments in the PA Democratic Party. We also got some announcements about, like I said, at the top of the show, the Rick Smith Show, and some expansion of progressive media, which is going to be pretty cool. But going into this break, there's going to be a different break we normally hear. We're going to push the labor history in two towards the end to the second break. But we've got this this group from I think they're St. Louis, I want to say, called The Invisible World. And they reached out to me this week, and they wrote a song specifically for the incoming Trump administration, but not for Trump, for all of us. And the song is simply called The Resistance. It was released, it was released on the 17th, right? So earlier this week. And you can actually go and download the song, right? It's a pay as what you want track through their website, and we'll put links to this in the show notes or through Bandcamp. And all proceeds will go to Planned Parenthood and the Midwest Music Foundation, right? So we're going to support them. We reached out to them. We made a contribution to them. We want to share the song with you and to encourage that you go check out welcometotheinvisibleworld.com/the resistance. That's welcometotheinvisibleworld.com/the resistance. I'll give you that. Check out the song. And after the song, we'll be back and we're going to talk a little about the PA Democratic Party and media moving forward. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back.
We are the resistance. We are living proof. They will know what happens if they don't tell the truth. We will rise up tall, gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. This is how it all gets started. Secret votes behind closed doors. While they MAGA in the closet. Getting richer off the poor. We will rise up tall, gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. Throw our healthcare in the garbage. Blame it on Planned Parenthood. They must know what they have started. We won't be misunderstood. We will rise up tall, gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. The aching of our feet won't slow us down.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. At the break, we were talking a little bit about some developments in PA Democratic Party, kind of the kind of work that we're going to need to do in terms of holding not just the people in the incoming Trump administration accountable, but also folks within the Democratic Party. And let me make it clear from the onset here, I have no, I don't have my head in the sand about the Democratic Party being some sort of kind of progressive, you know, vanguard or something like that. I do think it is the party that is there for us to make strides in. And like I said, we will have more on that coming down. There's some I want to give a shout out in this podcast too, as well, to organization that's up in I think it's Lehigh County. It's called the East Penn Democratic Club. I heard one of their members come on the Majority Report, a call in last week. And it sounds like they've got some amazing work that's going on there. We're going to have them on one of the other segments of our podcast from Raging Chicken Radio in upcoming weeks. We've been back and forth talking about some of the work that they're doing, and they're putting a lot of investment in local organizing, right? Kind of progressive activist work. So there's already some of those moves that people have decided, you know what, we're going to take over these organizations and we're going to push them in a much more progressive fashion. One other announcement before I forget, if you remember, this on the 28th, there was supposed to be at Muhlenberg College, a thing called How We Fight was being an event that was being put on by Representative Michael Schlossberg from Allentown. That event is being postponed, but it's being postponed for very good reason. They had such overwhelming response that the space was too small. So Schlossberg is looking for a larger space to bring in more people. That is a really encouraging sign. I was very disappointed when I first read it, and then I looked at why it was, and I'm very thrilled about to know that there's a lot of people that want to get involved. So there are some important signs on the horizon. But so with those kind of important signs, people organizing for kind of grassroots campaigning and activism and progressive causes, it seems like, Sean, we've got some pushes in the opposite direction coming out from the PA Democratic Party. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, it seems like Governor Tom Wolf and the leaders of the leaders that he installed for the Democratic Party are not learning from this past election. They have both come out against Keith Ellison to lead the DNC. They both said that. Well, Marcel Groen said he doesn't want someone who makes waves. He wants someone who actually fundraise money. And we see how that worked for Marcel and the PA Democratic Party this past election. It was their idea to run Katie McGinty, a wholly unqualified person for the United States Senate. I've said that from the start. I said she was completely unqualified for any public office when she was running for governor. These were based on the personal interactions I've had with her and based on the stories of her being in Harrisburg. And frankly, I was not surprised that she lost. They wasted millions of dollars on running her against Joe Sestak in a contested primary. And there was also a lot of other things going on. There were two bad choices, in my opinion, Sestak and McGinty. And that's why I voted for John Fetterman. A lot of progressives were upset with those who voted for Fetterman because it took votes away from Sestak, but which, hey, it happens. But McGinty was ran because the party did not like Sestak. They lost. And now the party does not want to endorse Keith Ellison for the national DNC because he just says he has flashy headlines. You know, they don't, and then he doesn't want someone who runs with flashy headlines.
Yeah, he wants somebody what? That's going to freaking stand on the sidelines and bury their head
stiff,
in the. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Like a stiff like Bob Casey.
No, I think that's right. The thing you said about Fetterman and the people getting pissed off, the Sestak people. Well, let's put this in context here. I mean, I voted for Fetterman too as well. It's like the choice. Look, Sestak, right, was no spectacular candidate either.
And I remember, like, when I was working with Rick, we were looking at Sestak's book, like, 20 minutes before Sestak came in. And he got through, like, most of it, like, leading up to that one interview. And Sestak was praising the privatization of highways out in Indiana and out in Chicago. And Rick was just, like, completely baffled about this. Like, are you kidding me? These were two of the, like, privatizing the Skyway in Chicago. He called it a great a great he praised privatizing the Skyway. You know, Sestak was not no liberal progressive champion by any stretch of the imagination.
No, exactly. And this is exactly my point, right? So the two top candidates, right? The two top candidates of the Democratic
privatization,
Party coming out.
Natural gas Democrats.
Exactly, right? This is what they had. This is who they cultivated. Why vote for John Fetterman? Is because that's what the Democratic Party in this state should be doing. Right? I mean, the fact is, if you look at, like, I mean, the Democratic Party, I swear to God, is the critiques that come about the Democratic Party about being elitist and all this kind of stuff. You know, people on the left sometimes brush that off. Or I say liberals, not people on the left don't, but people like left, like real left. But, you know, liberals are kind of Democrats. They brush that off as just kind of right wing criticism. But man, there's real truth in that. If you just look at where the PA Democratic Party have put their resources, they put their resources in places where they already think that they can win. Right. Like in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and some of the surrounding areas. That's it. Right. The Lehigh Valley, for example. Right. Which I have always said, right, for as long as I've lived here. Right. Is that is the future of Pennsylvania right there. It's the third largest population region in the state. Right. And it's virtually neglected by the PA Democratic Party. That right there is a perfect example of that. And all of these small cities and towns all throughout this state. Right. The Democratic Party in the state have just written off. They don't even compete in those things. They don't put resources and they don't organize in that. And I don't know what you call that other than freaking, like, you know, I don't know, liberal elitists in the cities. I mean, that's what it's kind of points to.
And one of the things that
was like a challenge to that.
And one of the things that happened this year, so Democrats who are in safe seats, right? I think a report came out by Morning Call this week, something like 20 Democrats gave $0 of their own campaign cash, you know, to the House Democratic Campaign Committee, and you know, and they still get their leadership positions. Dermody still gives them their leadership positions when they were fucking deadbeats within the party, and they give no money to get other Democrats elected and pick up seats. You know, these are the people. They're a party of fucking losers. You know, Dermody, Sterla, Hannah, all these people, they get rewarded for losing, giving the House a fucking supermajority, giving the Senate a supermajority. And what do? They reward themselves by keeping themselves in leadership for the past 6 years. I'm sorry, this is getting me really pissed off, but like, these people are a party of losers. You know, to quote Cenk Uygur, they're losers. They don't know how to win. Winning is not in their vocabulary. What's in their vocabulary is protecting their own asses and not respetting the resources anywhere else. You know, one of the things I was looking at that same story, Peter Schweyer, representative from Allentown, who I know, and he basically said, "Yeah, you can't just give $250 to the Democratic Campaign Committee and say, all right, there it is. No, you have to give $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 of your own campaign cash to get other people elected. That is your duty as a Democratic representative in a safe district to give money to the party to make sure other Democrats get elected. And what happens? You have a bunch of fucking deadbeats in this party, and they get rewarded by not giving any money to the party, and they keep their own fucking leadership positions.
Well, that's right. And I think that here's the difference, right? And I think that way of thinking, right, was true for a long time on both sides, right? It had been both Republicans and Democrats in the state kind of operated like that. Right. It was kind of like a much more low key thing that all changed. Right. That all changed, like, with the election of Obama a little bit before, when you started seeing the same kind of dynamics that we saw in other states like Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio, Michigan, right across the board, like all this kind of ALEC based kind of Republican playbook where they switched it up. That's why we had the kind of intense gerrymandering we had in the state. Pennsylvania was targeted as one of the states to do this. And then that's why you have people like Scott Wagner, right, who have emerged in the party leadership on the right, right, who understand exactly what you do. That's why Scott Wagner went there with bags of campaign cash to help out other kinds of candidates. That does not happen on the Democratic side. And then the other thing is, let's be clear about this. I think that the dynamic that you just laid out is not true of all Democrats in the PA Democratic Party. Like, I mean, I think Michael Schlossberg is a perfect example of this, as someone who's actually put some time into organizing, right? Some time into kind of doing that kind of community-based organizing and so on. There's some other people across the state in that party who have been pushing, right, to get elected. I'm thinking, you know, Kareth Strayer, right, or Strayer is her last name, like up in the kind of northwest side of the state, where she's really put in some time to actually do some community organizing and things like this. But these are the candidates that are not seeing extensive support from the party apparatus. And that is exactly the problem that we're kind of pointing to. So, I mean, that's incredibly, incredibly frustrating.
The Democrats flipped one seat in November, one seat, and they won by 25 votes. And they picked off someone in Chester County who was a crazy conservative. And what happened? They won. I mean, you listen, the districts are gerrymandered in a way where most of them could be 60-40. But if you do actual on-the-ground organizing and put campaign cash into these districts, you know, instead of just protecting your own ass and make sure you get reelected and no one else gets the money, you know, which is what the Dermody and others have been doing. They give it to the incumbents and they don't focus on picking up seats. You know, like the whole entire party is like the leadership of the Democratic Party is why we're here today.
Exactly. And I would say that if you look at that, exactly that leadership of the Democratic Party nationally, absolutely. Here in Pennsylvania, especially when Pennsylvania was being targeted by the right. And let's be clear, folks, is that this is one of the states, right, that Hillary Clinton lost and why we have Donald Trump. And if that is not writing on the wall about the failures of this, the stories that have been coming out of Pennsylvania about what happened during the Hillary Clinton campaign, forget about like the actual, you know, what the presidential candidates were saying, the campaign organizing in Pennsylvania, there were people that were showing up. Right. First of all, there were people that were running the campaign out of their front yards, right, in major kind of places where basically the Democratic
Party densely populated places like where the old steel mills
exactly right in the Lehigh Valley,
in
right
Bristol, in
Montgomery
in
County,
Croydon.
Right in Bucks County, right, all these places that even the Hillary Clinton campaign said that was key. They had no resources, right? So, and the PA Democratic Party had absolutely no plan. So it was basically the sweat of volunteers. There were people that were showing up on election day, right, to people that they thought were Hillary Clinton voters, only to find out on election day that they were getting out the vote with Trump voters. They were showing up at Trump voters' places saying, you got to get out and vote today. And like, oh, my God, that was a Trump voter, not a Hillary voter.
And one of the things that's
a failure of the state party as well as the national party.
And one of the things, so like locally on here in Dauphin County, I heard this story. The Dauphin County Democratic Party had canvassers out on a Saturday in downtown Harrisburg, which is a fucking ghost town, on Saturdays, canvassing for Hillary Clinton. And Roxbury was talking to those people, dude, you should be like across the river talking to these people over there in Cumberland County, or you should be up in Allison Hill, up in Uptown, where, you know, your poor communities are at who need to get out the vote, because all the people down here are going to get out and go vote. You have like what Rick said, you have a bunch of ones and fives. These people were dead set ones. They were going to get out and vote for Clinton no matter what. So why are you canvassing people who are going to go out and go vote no matter what? I must have had like the same Planned Parenthood person knock on my door three times in lead up to the election. I'm like, listen, I'm going to vote regardless. Stop knocking on my door.
Go talk to the people that are not going to vote or that you need to convince. I mean, that was it. We had, I'll tell you this. We had what blew my mind is that every election up until this one that I've lived, I live in Perkasie, right? Perkasie, Pennsylvania, is that every election up until this one, that when we're moving up to election, this includes off-year elections, off non-presidential election years, we always have people come up and canvassing and kind of knocking on our doors and things like this, right? We're always, we'll talk to people, blah, blah, blah. This year, we didn't even see people in our neighborhood, right? And this is an area that has kind of, you know, it's mixed. I mean, yes, it's GOP has got a heavy GOP leading in the area, but you have increasingly kind of like Democrats moving into the area, right? So, and no one showed up. And then my wife said is that it wasn't until the weekend before the election, she saw a group of kids. They were probably 18 or 19 years old, right? Clearly had no idea what the heck they were doing. We're on with clipboards, just kind of like walking through the neighborhood and afraid to even go up and approach people at their doors, right? That shows you that there had been no training. There had been no experience in kind of getting people ready to do that kind of canvassing. It was unbelievable. But listen, we're running up to a break right here. One thing I want to say, one thing I want to say before the break and before we kind of do a little kind of fun stuff for the day, I've got a major, major announcement. You all know that we have been working with the Rick Smith Show for a long time now. I'm usually on Mondays. Rick's show is now, he's changed up the format a little bit. So now it's running from 10 to 12 weekdays instead of 3 to 6. So it's from 10 to 12. So we've been kind of redoing the structure of the show. So we haven't been on regularly so far in 2017. We will be very soon. But so on, we'll be Raging Mondays. We'll be on there for Raging Chicken, talking about events for the week. Rick and I have met quite a bit, strategizing about how to move forward, how to expand progressive media in Pennsylvania, across the region, or across the country. And a lot of times we've been hitting our heads up against the wall. But all that work is really paying off. And so we've got some amazing news to announce today. The Rick Smith Show is now going to be expanding to 40 million homes nationwide. So check this out, folks. The Rick Smith Show and Free Speech TV are teaming up to bring our nationally recognized radio program, The Rick Smith Show, the nation's television airways. So mark your calendars, everybody, for Saturday, February 18th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Rick Smith Show will be on Free Speech TV. And Free Speech TV is a national network that reaches over 40 million households nationwide via a full-time channel on Dish Network, channel 9415, Direct TV channel 348, and community access channels nationwide. Free Speech TV is also available on Roku, Google Nexus, and Amazon Fire. You can also get it streaming online at freespeechtv.com. And this is going to be a weekly hour-long program that will focus on issues faced by working people across the political spectrum and share news and information about what is happening in D.C. and in state capitals across the nation. You know, today, as Trump, and this is from the press release today, Donald Trump becomes the 45th president of the United States of America, and the Rick Smith Show will be there to hold his administration accountable on issues facing working people. You know, I would urge people, if you want to help support the Rick Smith Show, go to ricksmithshow.com. And click donate, right? And help make this like just an amazing, amazing opportunity. I'm so excited. We're going to be working with Rick all throughout this process in a consulting role. We'll do what we can to help him kind of on the framework, you know, anything set up and promotional materials and all this kind of stuff. But congratulations to Rick Smith. I look forward to February 18th with the launch of the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV. So with that, we're going to give you a little voice of Rick Smith through his labor history in two. And after this break, we'll come back and we'll hopefully have some maybe some fun things or interesting things to talk to you in the final closing. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day the Flint Women's Emergency Brigades were founded. Janora Johnson, a socialist, was a main leader of the Women's Auxiliary No. 10 throughout the strike. A different kind of auxiliary, it built the leadership skills of women through classes in labor history and public speaking. It also set up a first aid station and child care center, raised strike funds, and walked the picket lines. The Women's Auxiliary was transformed through its actions at the Battle of Bull Run when the women put their bodies between the strikers and the police. According to Janet Hazett, the women moved beyond supporting the strike to participating in it. 50 women signed up the next day. By the end of the strike, over 300 women had joined. The women adopted an official uniform of red berets and red armbands. They were armed with clubs to smash factory windows when police gassed the sit-downers. Their participation in the strike was heroic, and their work continued after the victory. They sought to represent the interests of women autoworkers, who often found co-workers less than welcoming and experienced sexual harassment and occupational discrimination at the hands of supervision. Many women autoworkers formed the core leadership of several chapters. Historian Nancy Gabin notes that this was not always the appropriate arena for advocacy, saying, quote, "By encouraging women workers to participate in the auxiliaries, the UAW abdicated its responsibility to these workers." However, Johnson emphasized, it was a radical change to give women a right to participate in discussions with their husbands, with other union members, with other women, to express their views. That was a radical change for those women at that time.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. So, Sean, on this day, on this day. Inauguration Day. Do we have any, I don't know, good news, hopeful news, or what the hell are we going to be drinking when it comes to once this is all over? What's up?
Well, I guess the state's not going to be that bad since President Trump's first or Donald Trump's first act as president is to take the weekend off. So really, we don't have to worry about anything until Monday. So,
well, the question is who's going to be minding the store while he's doing whatever the heck he's doing up in New York?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, especially the stuff with New York City, what de Blasio is going to be doing with the pressuring Donald Trump and the administration, the Trump organization, mm-hmm. as Sam Cedar calls it, which the name I like a lot.
Yeah, I think we definitely should give the props to Sam Cedar and the Majority Report for that. And I think that we should adopt that and refer to the Trump administration as the Trump organization, since that seems to be closer to the way he's running things.
One of the things I wanted to touch on that we didn't get to touch on yet was the Betsy DeVos hearing.
Oh man, yeah.
How much of a fucking train wreck was that?
You know, I think we might even, you know, you and I, we might have to have a special session. See if we can get some time before next Friday, to just run through some of the hearings and stuff, because the DeVos hearing was crazy. The Price hearing was nuts. The DeVos was just more of like, you just can't believe what the hell's going on. She doesn't even know what she's talking about. But that's what, you know, people have been saying, have been paying attention for a long time. So let's see if we can set up some time to kind of just talk about that. Just because I think we should give it some order. And I just think, you know, being Inauguration Day today, there's a lot we just didn't get a chance to talk about.
Yeah. One of the good things that I felt like yesterday was actually pretty neat. So Gorillaz, that, mm-hmm. You know, the concept band out of England, that is a animated concept band, not like real life. They came out with a new song yesterday. The artist from that group came out with a new song yesterday called Hallelujah Money, featuring a poet, Benjamin Clementine. Mm-hmm. And he was actually like reciting the lyrics of the song, not singing it. And the video starts with him standing in an animated elevator hallway of Trump Tower, and he's taking this elevator straight up top of Trump Tower and talking about all the vices and everything that Trump has brought out over the past over the election cycle. And you know, it's great. That's what we need more of. We need artists. This is, you know, talk about like Chris Hedges and Death of the Liberal Class. You know, one of the books that really has stayed with me over these years is, mm-hmm. we need artists to get back involved in this.
Well, you know, I'm glad go ahead.
But we need artists and writers and anyone who has any type of intellectual skill or creative skill to get involved and drive this resistance, because those are the ones that are going to do it.
Well, and you know, I think this is I should mention this now. You know, we talked a little bit about this during the break. But I think we're winning a release here, and this is for anybody who's still listening to today's podcast. Please pass this on. But I'm going to have to push this out also on our sites. So what we're thinking about doing here, and this goes right along with what Sean was just saying, is that we would like to, you know, we got that piece that we played earlier on in the podcast from The Invisible World called The Resistance. As a reminder, you can go to, you know, theinvisibleworld.com. And let me see, I just got that one right. Do I have the right one here? It's The Invisible World. Well, I'll come back to it later. I think it's theinvisibleworld.com, but the song for Resistance, you look up The Invisible World, The Resistance, you can go and you can download that. It's a pay as whatever you can for the download, and all proceeds go to Planned Parenthood and the Midwest Music Foundation. So what we would like to do, especially in Pennsylvania and across this region, if you have original pieces of music, right, a little pieces of protest music that are connected to the resistance, to the Trump organization, and about kind of building strong political power, I'd love to be able to feature them on this podcast, right? And we'll put together a little, you know, kind of gift for you. We'll promo the song. We'll promo your band. Or if it's just you, you're writing it, that's fine. And we'll play them right here on Raging Chicken Radio. And we'll also feature them on Raging Chicken Press. And, you know, ideally what we can do is we can actually help facilitate putting together a compilation of, you know, protest music, original protest music, original kind of political music that's coming out in resistance to the Trump organization. Commission and what awaits us as we move forward. So if you got something like that, just shoot it at me at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. It's probably the best place to make sure I get it right away, or you can send it to editor@ragingchickenpress.org. And, you know, Sean is right. Any important political movement has always been marked by, you know, having artists as an integral part of what's going on. And music has been a big part of that. So, yeah. So, Sean, so we get here tonight, right? This inauguration is going to happen. You know, I think that maybe the reason why Donald Trump has taken the weekend off is because I don't think even he believed it was going to happen. So he's got to go home and pack up his house. He's got to have stuff for the White House. He's got to figure out, you know, is he going to bring, how many cans of tuna is he going to bring down there? Because he probably doesn't even know that he actually has an on-site cook at this point. But
I thought he was moving everything up to Trump Tower. I thought it was the other way around. I thought Trump Tower was going to become a new White House.
No. He's got that one dresser drawer that he's got to have overnight clothes in. He's got to make sure he gets the right stuff there. And he's got to figure out, I'm sure he's going to be doing a bunch of pictures so that how they can gild the White House to make sure it's all golden inside so he feels right at home.
And there's one thing that was hopeful. Did you see the protests that was popping up on the screens? I guess Friday night?
I was just about to say last night, too.
Or wait, right. No, Friday night or Saturday night when they're having a bunch of members from the LGBT community were dancing on Mike Pence's lawn.
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. That was a couple days ago.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. And then last night in front of Trump Tower in New York, there was a huge protest. And there's protests all over the place right now. So all over the place. So this is another reason I think that'd be it'd be useful if we could find some time to kind of to do another kind of intermediate podcast for this week, just because this weekend we got the Women's March in DC and cities around the country. There's one in Philadelphia. We're gonna have some people from Raging Chicken down in DC, some people from Raging Chicken in Philadelphia, maybe even in Doylestown and some of the other areas.
Harrisburg tomorrow's having a march tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Broad Street Market, so like two blocks away from my apartment. I'll probably get out and try to take some photos of it before I go to work at 12 o'clock. I don't know if I'll be able to get a story up, but I would like to definitely get some pictures up online before I head out to work.
That's fantastic. And if there's people out there that are at different protests and you've got a little story about the day, you can send it to me at editor@ragingchickenpress.org. And, you know, and we'll put those stories up, right? editor@ragingchickenpress.org or ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. Either one will work. And send it to me and we'll put those stories up. I think it's important that we get the kind of coverage from progressive media about how people have been participating. So, Sean, if I had to leave it to you there, I know you got to work tonight and things like this, but if you have I've been giving a lot of thought to the beer that I'm going to be drinking this evening. I got to go out for a little bit. We got a kind of a function we got to go to, and then I'm going to come back. I'm going to be I've got my beer lined up for tonight. So you got anything in mind for yourself?
Nothing right now. I'm kind of like cutting back on the beer since New Year's. I'm looking to getting better shape for my brother's wedding coming up in the summer and going out to California. I'll be doing a lot of hiking out in Yosemite and stuff like that. So I'm cutting off the beer a little bit, but I can tell you a couple of heavy hitters made their way back to Pizza Boy this week.
Okay.
Armor Shark, which is an 11% double IPA, made its way back. Really nice. I don't know what to say, but it's a really thicker, it's a lighter 11.5% beer. It's on the lighter side body wise. And then we came back with Archangel, which is a 13% quadruple IPA. And this time they put blueberries in it, and it actually came out really good.
Nice, nice. Well, you know, I've got mine all set for tonight. I tell you what I wanted. I decided to go with something tonight where at least one of them that is going to be it goes back to some of the best activism that I've ever been a part of. You know, I went to school, went to college up in Syracuse, and we had an amazing group of folks up there and activists up there. We did a lot of organizing work and so on. Shout out to my friends Ben Tupper, and who's done a lot to support this show, and Stu Ross over there in Northern Ireland, who I was actually supposed to be on a Skype call with right about now. But I think we're going to have to reschedule that because my day went crazy. So we're up in Syracuse and doing that. So Syracuse had a bit of a rebirth. It wasn't, you know, an industrial town. It was a salt town and steel town. And but they did some redevelopment. And there's a brewery in Syracuse called Middle Ages Brewing Company. And I've always loved their stuff. I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't say that they make the absolute best beer in the world. They make some really good stuff.
I thought you were telling me you were going to bring out some Jenny Ice or Jenny Light.
No. Oh, no, Jenny Cream. That would be the most appropriate, but... Jenny Cream is really what we drank. Jenny Cream, she's actually plop Fisherman Friends in our Jenny Cream and drink that. So menthol beer, man. I'm still waiting for the people that are going to do that. But it was good. So the what I wanted, but I couldn't find it. The limited time I was up in New York last week was they have an ale up there called Apocalypse Ale, which is a strong ale that comes in about 9%. So I couldn't find that. Was bummed out. So I went to an old standby, which is their Dragon Slayer. Their Russian Imperial Stout comes in at 9.5%, which is an awesome. I love this stout, and having the Dragon Slayer be what was in my glass this evening seemed really appropriate. So that's what I'll be having tonight when I get back home, and trying to make sense and rewatch the stuff that is going to be playing on TV all day long today. So, Sean, any final thoughts for this week?
Let's buckle up and get ready for the next 4 years.
I hear you, right? And as the old labor saying goes, don't mourn, organize. This is Kevin Mahoney, the editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be back with you next week, maybe twice next week, but we'll be back with you at the very least next Friday for Out to Coop podcast with Sean. Hey, Sean, man, on this dark day, I wish you well, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yep, I'll talk to you later.
All right. This is Kevin Mahoney from Raging Chicken. We're out of here. See ya!